Okay, we've gone on to a minute after the 6 o'clock hour. It's Sunday. That means it's time for the Better Health Radio Show. And as per usual, we've got Dr. Renee Boyce on deck. She's going to be your presenter, and she has her guest with her. Going to let her introduce her guest. Doc, how are you doing, my dear?
I'm doing quite fine, thank you. Good evening to you, Gregston, and good evening to all of our listeners. I happened upon one of our mutual acquaintances, friends, colleagues, Gregston, yesterday.
Really?
Yes, the venerable Ken Husband.
Oh, jeez. This is one story you could not tell me. You met him?
I did.
Wonderful.
Yes, so I'm going to get mangoes and you're not going to get any.
Yeah, he keeps telling me to come and pick them myself and not stop waiting for him to do it for me. Uh-huh. But anyway, you can have my lot.
Thank you very
this
much.
This time.
Thank you. Well, welcome to the Better Health Radio Show, helping you to live your best life. If you want to reach us here in studio this evening, the number to call us at is 434-1790. If you want to send us a WhatsApp, you can reach us at 266-4862. Those numbers, once again, 434-1790 to call in, and 266-4862 for those persons who prefer to send us messages. This evening, we have another repeat guest. We have Professor Anne St. John, who is a well-known pediatrician who has since retirement. Well, during her time working, she was concerned with the health of children, but she has taken her retirement to focus more so on one area of child health, and that's child obesity in children. And that's what we're going to be focusing on this evening. Welcome, Prof.
Thank you very much, Renee.
Yes, how are you doing today?
Oh, fine, thank you. You make it sound like I've stopped working. No. I haven't really. I just left a place which is part of my, maybe I have left a bone in that place after all the years where I worked there, but just that part, having reached a point where you have to leave the government service as such.
And if you were to take a look at Professor St. John, you would not believe that she has reached that age to have to leave the government service. As a matter of fact.
Well, thank you very much.
Yes, Professor St. John has been the same size since I was a student up until this day. So that shows that it is possible. And we're not going to, I don't want to say beat up on the adults, but we're not going to touch the adults today. We're going to deal with the issue of obesity in children. So let's start with the definition, Prof. What is obesity?
Obesity and overweight go hand in hand, and they're calculated by looking at your weight in kilograms and your height and working out a formula called body mass index. And their standards, which are like between third to 97th percentile as such. This is a very technical term, but one doesn't want to say, pick out a child and say, it's too small or it's too big. Their standards. Everybody can't be the same size. So one works out by looking at the weight in kilograms over height in meters squared, and that works out body mass index, which is usually less than 25, to be on the safe side.
So do we use the same body mass index calculation in children as we do in adults, or is there a different calculation and different charts for children?
The number is the same. It's the However, same. There are percentiles. That you look at. So we have the standard, whereas an adult, you would say 25 is the number. You would have percentiles for the children to look at curves. And those curves can be found in the Green Health Passport, which is supplied by the Ministry of Health when the child is born at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital or Bayview. They get one of those green books.
Yeah, so this is the best time, I think, to mention that we ask parents to cover those books. Some of the books, like Prof said, the books are green, but sometimes when we see them in clinic, they have all the other colors of the rainbow on them. And some of the nurses have to use gloves to handle these books. I've seen some of those books. So this is a book that your child will need into adulthood because the vaccinations are recorded in that
Certainly,
book.
Certainly, up to university and pass. If you're going to do postgraduate anywhere like master's and PhD, wherever you go, they're going to be asking for your immunization still. So it's not just until 4.5 you can discard it and ill-treat it as you wish.
That is quite true. I will admit, too, that I've raised an eyebrow at some of the books. So this is a plea coming from not one but two doctors. Please cover those books. Cover those books because they have to last a long time. I remember when I was a student as well, we had this, I don't want to call it running joke, but we had a joke about the Michelin Man, that there were some babies who look like the Michelin Man. You know, the Michelin Man is the little white guy that advertises the tires, and he has several rolls and chunks. And sometimes, sometimes when you see babies, they look like the Michelin Man. So is it possible for babies to be obese, babies and small children?
Yes, certainly. Obesity in children begins from in utero. And while the child is conceived, then it's been shown that gestational diabetes has a strong link to childhood obesity. That's when the mother is spilling excess of sugar in her blood. And also babies who are larger than expected, the average weight being about 2.5 kilograms, say about 6 pounds, something, that is associated with obesity and overweight. In fact, if a child has one parent who is overweight or obese, there's a 40% chance that the child is going to be having that NCD, which is non-communicable disease. And if two parents are overweight or obese, there's a 80% chance. So even before the little baby pops out, you can predict that they are on a track for obesity and overweight.
And we do see it when we look through. If we were in town, for example, and we see an obese adult walking and we see the child, that child is obese as well. And sometimes, like you said, we do see two parents who are obese and then the child is chubby. And people tend to associate a fatter child, a chubbier child, with health. But that's the complete opposite, because a child who is obese is actually an ill child.
It's a cultural thing. In many societies and cultures, the child who is having the fat cheeks and the two chins is healthy. And it's also prevalent in our area, although I believe less now because people are becoming more conscious about the non-communicable diseases, how it's affecting our children, affecting one in three children.
I was just about to ask
Barbados.
You, how bad is it?
It's one in three children is overweight or obese. And in certainly some of the Caribbean territories, one in two children. So we have a serious issue there, health challenge. It's causing a lot of increased resources, which could be better deployed. And it's filling up of the clinics when the children are older, certainly even in pediatric clinics. Now, as I see children, if I see children, 10 children, there are about four that I may need to counsel the parents about. And I must say that we are guilty, we as the healthcare practitioners, healthcare workers, of just bypassing this issue and just looking at what they came about. Like they came for a cold and cough or asthma, skin rash. You find that the practitioner or the public health center where they go, it's not documented that the child's overweight or obese, although it's very glaring. It's not identified or highlighted to spend some time with the parent talking about it.
Sometimes I will admit that parents are not aware that their child is obese or overweight. Some parents in my years of practice, I mean, I pale in comparison in terms of years to prof, but I've realized that some parents really are not aware. So this is one of the purposes of the Better Health Radio Show, getting that information out there. So today we're more so going to focus on what is being done about the epidemic of obesity. And even before we jump into that, Prof, somebody is calling us. So let's say hello to that person. Good evening and welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Peace be unto you, ma'am.
Thank you, and the same to you.
And to your, well, to y'all are two distinguished ladies, I must say.
Oh, thank you very much.
But Madam, Madam St. John, I heard when you first started, you said a bone, but you're not a bone. You haven't left in the QEH hospital, in the children's ward and antenatal and those hollow halls of the QEH. Your presence are always felt there. And I, as a grandparent and as you know, my family, and I know many families will want to say the same thing, we thank you so much, because you spend hours and hours in that hospital when you could be home with your family. And I thank you, and I always pray for you, especially.
Thank you
so
much.
And I pray that God will continue to bless you. I hope that you'll be able to fight the obesity problem. I hope you'll be able to get that do the way that you want it. My grandchildren, I have two grandchildren with glaucoma and asthma, so they always but they're growing out now, but they used to be always in the hospital. And I thank you very much, ma'am. I will always remember you until I close my eyes. You are a genuine, a very serious and passionate person when it comes to your children on the Children Award. And this is because I want to say it is true as John 3:16. And may God continue to bless you and bless all the doctors, and especially those good ones who go beyond the call of duty to look after our family at the QEH.
Thank you very
much. Thank you very much, ma'am. It's a pleasure hearing you on the radio, and it's a pleasure talking to you already. The other lady, I watch her on Morning Barbados. I think the voice sounds like hers. Is that true?
Yes, ma'am. You're correct.
Right. I watch you with Cassandra them when you're on mornings. So, Grayson, good evening. And I'm locked on listening.
Yes, please.
Thank you very much, and may God bless you all in all your endeavors, and for the best and the health of our country and our nation and the Caribbean, because I know you all looked after children from overseas too. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good evening as well.
I would like to say we cannot fight the good fight alone. We have to have the grandparents like that lady. Sounds very passionate. She's passionate like me. You have to have the help of the parents, the grandparents, care providers, healthcare workers, ministries, government, everything to just stem this epidemic of childhood obesity in our island and also in our region.
Yeah, I don't think that it's impossible. I do think that it is going to be a challenge until everybody buys into it. It is still going to be an uphill battle, but we keep doing it and keep doing it and keep talking about it until we get to that point where we see, just as how we had the problem with mother-to-child transmission in HIV and those rates are down, I firmly believe that with the same vigor, we can get this epidemic under control. So what do you think some of the things are that contribute to childhood obesity? Why is the problem there? What causes it?
Well, as I said, there are a number of factors. One is cultural. Mm-hmm. Feeding it. You express love through to the child by feeding it, giving it more. You often hear people saying, oh, if you don't behave yourself, I won't take you to wherever, mm-hmm. somewhere to go get some food, and rewarded them with lollipops and things like that. So that plays a role, but there are a lot of external factors which have a considerable impact. And there, I will mention about five, mainly the increased intake of energy-dense foods and consumption of sugar-sweetened beverages. And I don't have to tell you what the children love to take. They love those little pop drinks, machines, juices, which have lots of sugar. And certainly those are playing a major role. Insufficient physical activity, the recommendations are at least 1 hour of active physical activity a day, and inappropriate consumption of excessive food portions. Second helpings to be discouraged. This happens. People put a certain amount on the plate. Now, parents may not have an idea of what exactly the child needs. Certainly in an office setting and clinic setting, parents often complain the child does not eat enough or doesn't eat. Picky eater is a very frequent thing. And their concept of what they want the child to eat versus what is realistic for the child to have are diverse. So they want to force feed the child. In fact, there are some parents who have been reported as feeding the child to make it vomits. That's the only thing the child can do is vomit, because they have put a certain amount on the plate and they expect every single spoon to be taken. So excessive portions, out of portion for their age and size. Markedly decreased consumption of vegetables and fruits. If you look, I always try to promote the healthy plate, which has half fruit and vegetables and then the starch and the protein, one quarter each. Looking like a garden, a pretty garden.
Yes, very colorful.
Unfortunately, if you do a survey, as was done, looking at students and adults, even what their plate has is brown and white. They have the meat and they have the starch, but the vegetable is not significant in their choice. And then finally, there's a shift away from locally grown source foods that have fiber. For example, yams, potatoes. People complain how the vegetables cost so much, but as we say, take seasonal vegetables, and you'll find that you can manage within your budget. Coupled with the high trans fat and high cholesterol foods, the fried chicken, the potato chips. These things and refined sugars and high cholesterol in the foods that are offered. So those factors are the main ones which have contributed to the epidemic of obesity.
Yeah, it's not uncommon at all on mornings going down to work to see a child with a foil wrapper with some sort of snack that is not healthy and a sugar sweetened beverage on the way to school. So they're wearing their school uniform. It's before 8 o'clock in the morning. And these children, this is what they're eating so early in the morning. And then at break time, they're going to have a similar snack and drink. At lunchtime, they're going to have one of these sugar sweetened beverages with their lunch, which usually from the school cafeterias is greasy and full of large portions that the children don't need. And then in the evening after school, again, another
sugar sweetened. In fact, surveys that have been done, one particular one showed that 73% or more carbonated drinks per day was 73% or more of the students polled consumed carbonated drinks per day, more than one drink, and they had no intake of fruit and vegetables in the last month. And 70% reported low levels of activity. So you can see that we have to have a baseline of information so that we can work on it.
Yeah, the cultural shift is not doing as good, because usually the children would have been outside running about and so on, but now everybody is glued to the screen of something or the other. And
yes,
this is definitely helping to promote childhood obesity. So what has been done? What are some of the steps that have been put in place in order to try to stem the tide of obesity? I don't even want to say tide. We can talk about tsunami, because it really is more of a tsunami than a tide.
Certainly.
Of childhood obesity.
Yes. There have been several efforts tried over the years, meaning that people have done these studies. I think Professor Henry Fraser, Professor Hennis, Dr. Colin Alert, way back, like some 20 years ago, they started surveying the secondary schools and looking also at university students. And it was, you know, you keep hammering the population with this data, but it doesn't mean anything to them. So there was a survey done which was reported in December, and looking at obesity. And this was a study done by a cadres poll. And we were looking at what exactly people thought. And it was clear that the population of parents surveyed thought it was important that the government needed to play a role, 78%. The government needed to help assist in reducing childhood obesity.
So we're going to talk about some other important stuff when we come back. We're going to take a break right about now.
Okay, just about 19 and a half after 6 is our time. Just a couple notices for you. With Tropical Storm Dorian approaching the island, Massey Stores wishes to advise its customers that its supermarket at Worthing and Supercentre Warrens will be open until 9 p.m. to allow customers to stock up on their essentials. Massey Stores encourages you to take all precautionary measures and urges you to be safe and proactive as we prepare for the adverse weather conditions. That's Massey Stores Supermarkets at Worthing and Supercentre Warrens, opening until 9 p.m. Massey Stores, our family serving your family. Also, A1 Supermarkets at Carlton and Emerald City will be opening until 9 tonight. 9 tonight, including Hammerhead Hardware. That's A1 Supermarkets at Carlton and Emerald City, opening until 9 tonight, including Hammerhead Hardware. We've got another notice for you, this time from LIAT. LIAT, the Caribbean airline, advises that they will be cancelling 15 flights on Monday, 26 August, that will affect arrivals or departures from Barbados's Grantley Adams International Airport. It will also affect the aircraft which overnights in Barbados, and therefore flights on Tuesday, 27th of August. Passengers, please check the email attached to your booking, or call 434-5438. That's 434-5438. Or you can call 1-888-844-LIAT. That's 1-888-844-5428. And one more before we get back to the good doc and her guest. PriceSmart wishes to inform its members that due to the impending storm, we have extended our opening hours today, Sunday, August 26, and will now be closing at 9 p.m. Tomorrow, Monday, August 26, we will be opening for business at 8 a.m. Doc, it's back over to you.
So just before the break, we were discussing a poll that was done by Cadres about the perceptions of adults in childhood obesity. So go ahead, Prof.
Yeah. Well, it was clear Barbadians are showing strong support for policies that would create healthier environment in the children's nation schools. And in 2018, the Heart and Stroke Foundation of Barbados, of which I am the lead champion for childhood obesity, commissioned the services of Cadres, looking at a face-to-face interview and survey, looking at schools, looking at parents nationally, and there were 816 respondents in this survey between November and the end of December. And in general, it was quite interesting, the findings revealing that there was a general concern about obesity, and 88% very concerned. 12% were not concerned. And they thought, as we were quite curious, people are thinking about this, the contributors to obesity in children were eating large portions, eating too often, things like eating unhealthy foods, lacking exercise, drinking sugary drinks, and preparing fewer meals, buying meals out. So they thought, 78%, that it was important for the government to have a role in trying to reduce childhood obesity. And the support continued, looking at the food environment. They were in favor, 88%, of maintaining a healthy school meal nutrition standards. They thought this. 72% thought there was restriction on unhealthy foods and beverages was necessary. 73% thought there was restriction on unhealthy food and beverage and advertising. And they were kind of neither here nor there are restricting unhealthy food and beverage company sponsorship. Now, we found, looking that advertising and marketing of unhealthy junk foods and fast foods plays a significant role in the students' choices.
There actually was a, what do you call them, the documentaries, which actually showed that marketing, they used tools to put the brightly colored boxes and so on at the height of the children, so that when the children pass through their eyes see these brightly colored characters and so on, and they so on and so forth, and then they tell their parents, you know, this is what I want, and the healthier stuff is stacked to the top, you know. So this is how they market. I found that so very interesting.
It is too, but it's a real, it's a reality.
Yes.
Now, more than half felt that they should limit food and beverage sales and marketing within 100 meters of the school, and 93%. Said they required clean drinking water. That meant things like water coolers and water more available, because a survey which I was involved recently looking at the secondary schools, we found very few had even one water cooler that was working in the 23 secondary schools.
Wow.
So in general, there was support for national guidelines for healthy food environment, and policies coming from the respondents themselves. So that's what they're saying. The takeaway messages, meaning that Barbadians were very concerned about obesity in childhood. And the majority indicated that they would like to work along and have a national policy on a healthy school environment. So there we are.
Okay,
from
so
that
we have,
survey.
We have all of this data, 70, 73 to 80-something percent of the persons are concerned about what's being sold around the schools, about the fact that there's no water, that the children need to have better meals, better stuff at the canteen. How are we going to do it? How are we going to get this done?
Well, this has been started. So the Heart and Stroke Foundations, with some backing of some finance, because this takes a lot of money.
I must
tell you, it takes a lot of money. Advocacy, you see your results down the road, but it takes money. You have to market, just like the opposition markets, you have to market. So what happened was meetings and convening the partners, civil society, government agencies, ministries involved, like agriculture, education, health, and wellness, all these in place to try to get together, and a lot of the NGOs which are involved. And I am pleased to say that several workshops have been held since the beginning of the year with a lot of the stakeholders. People like, for example, looking at the vendors, we've had several workshops with the vendors. Now, vendors would say people are trying to stop them making a living. So you have the dispute about should you have vendors inside the schoolyard, should you have vendors outside, or you should have none at all anywhere within 100 meters of the school, so said the parents. But the focus and thrust has been to try to educate those who are selling snacks. There isn't anything wrong with snacks. Children like snacks. Children are fed six times a day. Three meals and three snacks. Yeah, of course. So what you want to do is to try to educate the parents and also the vendors and whoever feeds the children what they need to have. And looking at it in conjunction with nutritionists to see that when you go to the supermarket, I went there and I looked at like 100 different snacks, looking at the back, front of package labeling and cautions. A lot of our products which are available in the supermarket shelves do not have labels, and that requires legislation. So we have to have legislation enforced to be able to achieve something along the way, like other countries have done.
One of the things, Gregson, usually I don't remember who is going to be coming up next, but I thought of doing a back-to-school series.
Yes.
So Prof is the first in this back-to-school series where we're discussing childhood obesity, and next week we have on board a nutritionist to help discuss with the, for the parents what to prepare for children, healthy snacks, healthy food. So listeners can look out for that show next week, all about eating healthily with one of our nutritionists. So we've spoken with the vendors and the other stakeholders.
Certainly.
about all of these different things, and where do we go from there?
Yeah, well, speaking with the vendors, looking at it, I mean, they go, when you go as a vendor to a wholesaler and you buy in 1,000 packages of whatever, potato chips, blandin' chips, whatever, you're not really looking at the full values on the back. The important thing is whether that package has in 22 grams of sugar or it has less than 10 as acceptable, whether it has 800 grams of sodium salt or whether it has less than 100. These are things which are very important. And so we have been doing some education to try to sensitize the vendors when they buy what is better. And the next thing would be to try to get legislation to limit the products which are being sold.
I was just about to say, I'm here thinking about it. I'm seeing it in my mind's eye. As a vendor, I'm going to one of the wholesale places. And if they don't, the wholesale place, if they don't have the requirements, the less than, how many grams of sugar again? Less than?
Well, certainly less than 10.
Less than 10. So if the snacks that I want to choose are not there, then
what
that,
do I do?
What do I do? Yes, this is going to take such a shift in our thinking. This is really big.
It also involves, that's why I said it involves government, importantly, national standards. I have noticed, unfortunately, that a number of products made in Barbados, food, there is no labeling on those
that is
at
true.
All. It just says juice and contains sugar and orange. And potato chips, for example, it does not say, because they bring them in bulk and package them, and they do not have any labels on them.
And I don't think things that are made here locally, if we do any of the caloric studies on them to say whatever, how much servings of whatever, how many calories per serving on our locally produced things. I'm not sure if our labels carry those things of the locally made things. I'm not sure.
What I'm seeing is a number of the homemade drinks that you see in the supermarkets do not have any front of package labeling at all. So you're just buying whatever.
Something.
You don't know how much sugar it is. So this is gradually increasing the challenge. So that was the vendors. And then we work with the schools. They have been six model schools selected from the beginning of the year, and a plan is going to be rolled out in September. It's a surprise, so I'm not going to say much about it, but there are two primary schools and there are four secondary schools. Reynolds Weeks is one of them. There's another one. There's also the Foundation School, the St. Michael's School, the Alexandra School, and Queen's College. So Yay. There's a great plan there. Champion Model Schools, they're called. And switch it up is the campaign, meaning switch from what you were doing before to something different in the model schools. And there will be restriction of beverages. There will be building out health clubs, encouraging each school, and it's going to be expanded to all the secondary schools and primary schools eventually, to have a health club. And the health club is to educate, motivate, activity, things like that, to spread the message in the schools. And a public education of advocacy, sensitizing various people and the partners that we have, like the parents, the teachers, the school vendors, and the students. They have signed a memorandum of understanding with the Heart and Stroke Foundation, and certainly we expect to see some changes as of September. And we have the support, the big stick behind us, with us. We have hand in hand the ministries and the government and the teachers and the principals to try to do something for our students.
Yeah, if we don't do something soon, we are going to be reaping some very serious, serious consequences later on in life. Already, with the adults that we have, they take up so much of our healthcare budget because of the NCDs, the diseases like diabetes and hypertension and chronic renal failure. That takes up a significant portion of our healthcare budget. So it is wise to try to shift some of our healthcare budget and some of our funding from private sector and so on to try to improve the health of our nation, because if we don't do something, we're going to be lost as a nation. We're going to be a nation of obese people.
We're also going to lose some of our limbs. We're already high up in that rating, and certainly we're seeing type 2 diabetes in younger
people
and more students. Which is not a good sign at all.
No, it's not, because it's a lifestyle disease. It's not like the type 1 genetic where you have no control over having acquired that disease, but because of your lifestyle and how you live and how you eat, then you've developed diabetes, and it really, really is not good. What are some of the other things, Prof, that have been successful so far or put in place?
Well, we're These model schools will be using the outdoor exercise programs for the students. And certainly there is a document, a ministry policy, as I recall, it says that you should have physical education a certain amount. I can't remember how much in a week.
I remember.
But 1.5 hours in a week is certainly not the guideline.
I remember when I was in first, second, third form, thereabouts, we used to have PE twice a week. And then by the time you get up to sixth form, everybody's so focused on A-levels and so on, and that fizzles out. But it's been shown by so many studies that those persons who are physically active do better academically.
That is true, indeed. There are some other recommendations, a school garden. A number of the schools, primary schools certainly, and I know the Rennell Weeks does have one. In fact, I learned to my surprise and pleasure too, that they, for the last, I think, year and a half to two, no sugar sweetened beverages are sold in the school.
Congrats to Rennell Weeks.
Looking at the canteens, operators, quite an interesting discussion with them as well about what is being served to the students and monitoring it closely. And projects for the individual groups of students within there, to a competition so that you keep the focus on healthy lifestyles and exercise and activity going, and try to have this inculcated from a young age. And sometimes you find that the children themselves speak to the parents and say, you shouldn't have a Coke.
Yes.
I shouldn't have said that word, but a particular sugar sweetened beverage, which is very popular, water. So we have now had Water Wednesdays and Fruit Fridays in the primary schools, and that has been taken on and adapted very well.
Yes, at my children's primary school, they would remind me that, no, I can't have that today. It was Water Wednesday or Fruit Friday. So it really does take on children. You know, the teacher is the best person when the children are young. I do remember that something as simple as plurals. One of my friends, the plural of man is men. But the teacher said, in order to make this word plural, you add an S. So she wrote on her homework, although she knew better, that the plural of man is man's because the teacher said so. So we talk about the influence that teachers have on children at such a young age. So when the teachers get these values inculcated in our children, and parents too, parents are the ones, I hold parents responsible to a great extent. Children do not work anywhere. They do not have a source of income other than what their parents give them. And therefore, what children put into their mouth to a large extent is a reflection of what the parents do. And until you are 18, you are considered a minor. And therefore, your parents are responsible for you. I'm not going to deny that there are some children who sneak in the fridge, that there are some children whose parents tell them what they should and should not eat, and especially the diabetics. They get into a lot of trouble.
Difficulties.
The juvenile diabetics, because of peer pressure, as it were. The other children are doing these things, and therefore, even though my mother has said that I'm not allowed to have these things because I have diabetes, for example, they still go ahead and they do it. So we still do have a significant amount of work to do.
Yes, but I do say to the parent, if you have an obese, overweight child, and the parents are slim, they're not overweight or obese, please do not buy the things which the child should not be having. Just don't buy them. And then you don't have them either. It would be amazing to know that a number of the students who you give counseling to the parent for the child, they indirectly start to lose weight too, because they're changing what they're giving the child, and they cut these particular things. Substitution, not starvation. They think that meal
like
plans
that.
Are starvation. You're not trying to starve the child. You're just trying to change what they're having, and it's kind of cheating the body, and certainly they can lose weight or grow into their weight.
I was just here thinking about my own attempts again to try to eat healthily, and I had six pots out front of my house with different herbs and so on. And now all I have is brown. Everything
is gone.
Everything died. I am not good with plants. But I have a goodly neighbor who has come alongside me, and we are working. I think he told me that something green has shot up. So I'm hopeful. And this is a project that parents can do with their children. One, it gives them physical activity because they're outside and they're planting and they're associating reaping and sowing. So you put effort into something and you reap something. So that's a life lesson. There are so many things that you can learn from just having a simple garden.
Certainly. But, you know, on the other side, on the downside, people are so busy now trying to
make a living,
or they're also busy trying to make ends meet. And certainly buying the vegetables, but the ones that are seasonal, things that are 50 cents or a dollar a pound. I mean, cucumbers, for example.
$1.99.
You can find that quite well, and it's quite healthy, and cucumbers are the ones you eat because you will not gain weight too much when you're having that. They're water vegetables, melon, things like that. So certainly advice and recommendations and suggestions are very important to see, and I think that we will achieve something. Certainly, our backers for this program, international backers, have done work and funded research and programs in Chile and Mexico and been quite successful. But it means no tolerance. It means legislation and support of the authorities.
So we're going to take another break, and we remember that we are looking out for Tropical Storm Dorian. So we're going to have a few more notes on what's been going on with Dorian or some other advisories right about now.
All right. While I attempt to search for them. Thank you, Doc. Sure. Just about 20 before the hour of 7 o'clock, A1 Supermarket at Carlton and Emerald City opens tonight until 9 o'clock. Tonight until 9 o'clock, including Hammerhead Hardware. So let me give you that one more time. A1 Supermarkets at Carlton and Emerald City, opening tonight until 9 o'clock, including Hammerhead Hardware. Now, just taking a little bit of this, and then we'll come back with more messages. Another notice for you. With Tropical Storm Dorian approaching the island, Massey Stores wishes to advise its customers that its supermarket at Worthing and Supercenter Warrens will be opening until 9 o'clock, until 9 o'clock tonight, to allow customers to stock up on their essentials. Massey Stores encourages you to take all necessary precautions and urges you to be safe and proactive as we prepare for the adverse weather conditions. That's Massey Stores supermarkets at Worthing and Supercenter Warrens, opening until 9 o'clock tonight. Massey Stores, our family serving your family. 19 now before the hour of 7. Let's go back to the Goodly Doctors in studio.
Welcome back to the Better Health Radio Show. We are in with Professor Anne St. John, our local champion for fighting against childhood obesity. And like I had mentioned before, Professor St. John, I knew her from a long time ago. let's go with a long time ago.
Yes,
and
yes.
Professor St. John is still as slim as she was then as she is now. So what can we do at the individual level? We've spoken about all those persons who have input, the government, those persons who are backing you, the international funding. We've spoken about the vendors. We've spoken about the teachers and principals. We spoke about the school, Rennell Weeks, where there are no sugar sweetened beverages, you said, for about a year and a half now.
Yes, at least, I think.
At least. Yeah. And so what can I do as a parent to try to contribute to this fight against childhood obesity?
Well, it starts at the beginning. When you conceive, to think that you're not going to be increasing your weight over.
Yes,
the
right.
Obstetrician
eating for two
measures you and weighs you at each visit. That's very important, because after the baby is born, be it 9 pounds or whatever, the mother seems to continue. And it is amusing to me when I hear people say, only after I had this baby, I have this weight on. And I said, but I had gained a lot of weight, but I lost it within about a month. And certainly to blame the baby for the weight gain. So people continue to consume.
5 years after.
Yes, your metabolic rate may slow a little bit. So that's important for yourself to look at what you're having and nip it in the bud. As soon as you put on 5 pounds, you should weigh yourself as well. Maybe 2 weeks, get a scale. A scale is a good gift to yourself. Look at what's happening and nip it in the bud, because it gets way out of control. It's very difficult to lose weight and some kind of activity. So that's in pregnancy. Then the baby is born and we advise, change the diet recommendations for infants now. Solids, no solids until over 6 months.
Yeah, I remember.
Used to be people given cereal at 3 months, mm-hmm, because they think the baby is hungry every time the baby cries, and that's not necessarily so. So solids are introduced at 6 months or over, and maybe breastfeeding solely. This is not as practical as it may sound, for 6 months to see, because people go back to work.
At about 3 months. We have a call, so we're going to take this call. Good evening and welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Dr. Boyce, good evening to you and your guests.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I'm Gregston.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Dr. St. John, 2 questions I have for you. Is it normal for a child not to be speaking after 15, 16, 17 months? Is that normal?
Sleeping, did you say?
No, speaking.
Oh, speaking,
can't talk.
Speaking.
Yeah,
can't. That is some delay in the speech. Certainly by a year, you will find they say single words. I mean, they may say 10 words by a year, like cat, dog, house, car, whatever they're
mom, dad.
But certainly by 15 months, you would expect a little more vocabulary, even if they're just saying single words.
Yeah. The other question I have for you. There's a young lady, Miss Ashley Lashley, Miss Pearl Barbados. She has a group that she's a fledgling group.
All right, sorry, sir. Just check and see if your radio is still on, and if so, if you could turn it down for us, please.
Sorry, how is that?
Okay, that's better. Thank you.
Yeah. There's this lady, young lady, Ashley Lashley. She's 19 or 20 years old, but she has a group for the school kids, non-communicable diseases group. My question for you, Doc, is what are your organization doing to help her, organization? And do you think that, and don't you think that we have some splinter groups with reference to non-communicable diseases?
Well, firstly, I have the pleasure of having met Ms. Lashley. She was one of the champions in the Heart and Stroke Foundation's Childhood Obesity Program a year back when she was up for the competition. So having become so involved and so dynamic and enthusiastic, I am so happy to hear that she has formed a group. And certainly the splinter groups, the more groups you have trying to fight this epidemic, the better. It's very, very good to have the prongs way into everything in society. All groups are very, very important because once they're preaching the same message and having the same objectives, we will get there faster than if it was just one group.
As a matter of fact, Doc, I think her group for the first year, they had a walk, a march. Well, not a march, a walk.
Yes.
From, I think it was from Warren to somewhere up the highway. I'm not exactly sure where. And like you, I want to commend her because I think she's a very industrious young woman and she's very ambitious. I mean, for her age, she has taken on so much. And a lot of it has to do with mentoring little children. And I really want to applaud her for that.
I also support your applause and applaud her as well. And a walk is very important. You may or may not be surprised how many people do not walk the amount of walking that they're meant to do in a day. The Healthy Heart recommends 6,000 steps. Yeah. And certainly there are different devices which you can carry to tell how many steps you're taking. But in our culture, you might or may not know, people would like to park on top of the supermarket to when they go there instead of practicing to park at the end of the parking lot and walk.
Yeah.
Up and down, yeah. Walking, very, very important. Take the steps instead of the elevator, for example.
These things are important,
yes.
They probably will want to drive through the aisles in the supermarket.
Well, sometimes these things are, you see, people do not realize how important it is to have activity, heart health. You don't have to go to the gym and pay a huge fee every year. You can walk on the school compound. You can walk up and down the street.
You can even do
exercises at home. So it's very, very important to keep moving.
But, Doc, if you are not in a position to walk as frequent as you ought to.
Yes.
Like, let's say that person has an amputation or a double amputee or a person that is visually impaired and can't walk as much as they should.
Yes.
Then what is the possibilities of that person becoming sick?
There are things...
As a result of not walking as much as they should.
Well, they don't have to walk per se. You can do things like lifting weights. It's sit in a chair, lift your legs up and down about 30 times, three sets of whatever in the hour. There are sit and fit exercises as well. Trainers can certainly tell you what kind of things to do. You don't have to be physically walking around the garrison as such.
And the other thing is that you don't sit and eat everything that passes your way either. You still have to monitor what you're eating.
Dr. Boyce.
Yes, please.
What's happening with this repeat at night? Because I ain't asking Gregson anything. I ask you now.
But I told you before, we spoke to the persons in charge. They've yet to get back to us with reference to whether it's going to be, what it's going to be, and if it's going to be on which day or days. So that's as much as I can tell you.
But Gregson, it could only be on Sundays because they have the regular program in the week.
They might opt to do it before midnight on a weekday. You with me? Like 9:30, 10:30, something like that. That's an option as well.
Fair enough. Okay, goodly people.
Thank you for your contribution.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Okay, thank you very much. And Doc, I got to tell you, those people who want to park right under wherever the event is, that annoys me. 10 car spaces out there. But they come and force themselves in between my car and someone else's car just because it will be close. That That annoys me. So I agree with you.
Maybe they're thinking about the rain may fall.
Really?
And they'll catch a cold.
Oh dear, trying to be physical. I'm one of those persons. I have a device and I have it set at 6,000 steps. And there are some days when I don't make that 6,000 steps at all. Sometimes I don't even make 1,000. I'm thinking to myself, really? Has it really been only 600 and something steps?
Well, I don't want to tell you how much I did last week. That was just make you a little bit annoyed with me. Oh. But it was over 12,000.
Seriously,
that was on one day.
Oh, nobody asked your opinion just now.
I apologize.
We're talking to Professor Anne St. John about childhood obesity and the things that can be done at the individual level to help our children to not become obese adults.
Yes, Renee. We were at introduction of solids.
Yes.
No, introduction of solids mm-hmm. at 6 months.
Right.
And certainly they don't have to have the solids. If the baby is seeming fine, they're hungry, stay for 4 hours, they don't have to have the solids. So what's recommended, they introduce cereal and fruits and vegetables and starch. Now, there's a tendency that people wish, maybe cultured again, to give potato first. I don't know why, but you
soft.
Find potato. It's a starch, however, and certainly to know what is the expected recommendation for the infant. The other thing is loading them with a lot of milk, and milk certainly we recommend from a year that they, if they were on baby formula, breast milk, that they go on to 2% milk, lower fat, and try to balance their plate, what they have. Parents and caregivers, try to limit what you put on the plate, meaning don't put as much as for an adult mm-hmm. because the child cannot possibly consume that. And then there's a lot of wastage. Looking at the school meals, what yes, is true. Discarding a significant portion of the meals are discarded because they cannot eat that large loaf of bread, that roll. Only half of it, maybe. So a lot of money could be saved in food as well if we looked at the guidelines. So all these things are being sorted and recommendations put in place.
Right, so we started followed. With conception and the mother's health, and then early
nutrition.
The toddlers, early nutrition, and our school-age children now. Let's take a look at them.
The ones, well, between the age, say they're at preschool until about 3 to 4, and then if they're in primary school, government operated, they're there from 4 until 11. And this is where a lot of the negatives will be developed. You find they're offered school meals, and we are really meeting with the school meals to see what is being offered to the students.
And we need to get rid of this misconception that healthy food has to taste bad. That's one of the things, you know, vegetables taste bad, and in order to make it taste good, you have to pour all sorts of dressings,
salt.
And salt and add butter.
Sugar. That's another thing. Do not taste the baby's food because you then start to add sugar and salt. Just give it from the jar or mix it, no sugar and no salt, because it's cultivated as a habit. And certainly in the in our race, in our part of the world, the kidneys cannot tolerate that salt. Our kidneys are not tolerant of the salt, and so we get hypertension, high blood pressure in a significant portion, and the added salt to the food is not helping at all. We're peculiar in that way.
I happened to be at a presentation done at a local church, and I think this visual was very, very, very enlightening. We calculated how much sugar was in a serving of a particular sugar-sweetened beverage.
Yes.
And we've seen these models at the Heart and Stroke Foundation as well, where you have a bag and you put the particular drink there, and then the actual amount of sugar that's in that drink. So when you see a Ziploc bag, I hope that's not a brand, one of those plastic bags, and it's almost full of sugar, to think that that's the amount of sugar that you're consuming.
It's the sugar board. The
Whoa.
Sugar board that we use as a teaching model, which is taken to the schools, and it has about 7 different things on it, starting with water. No, the bag is empty. And then it increases to juice drinks. Now, if I can put a bit of time here. Juice drinks is not juice. Juice drinks have corn syrup solids in it, and that has a lot of sugar. So when you look on the package label, it has carbohydrate and then it has added sugar. And the pet drinks, which are very popular, the red ones and the brown ones.
Very colorful.
Colorful, and blue and green ones.
Yes, I don't think you
contain something like 30 grams of sugar in a serving. Now, our recommendation is no more than 25 grams of sugar a day, and that is equal to 5 to 6 teaspoons. So if you're looking at one of those and you have a whole bottle, that means you've taken
much more than
your impact, almost 3 days of sugar. So anything else you eat with sugar, you're just loading your body with the sugar. And it's just some explaining. The students appreciate it. They're asked to bring their water bottles, each have their water bottles and bring them to school. The students do appreciate it. And we had a game at the school, the primary schools and secondary, where we showed them, we laid out all the bottles on the table and they have a red, green and orange stoplight and they guess how much sugar is in it. And they didn't know, a number of them, that it was red for a lot of those sugar sweetened drinks.
That was eye-opening. And actually, even for some of the juices, or like you said, juice drinks, because you have to distinguish between 100% juice and juice drinks, then the amount of sugar, 14 teaspoons of sugar in one of those beverages.
Very few of those boxed drinks are actually juice. They are juice drinks. And if you look at the yogurt, the flavored yogurt is the next one, which contains so much sugar, something like 25 grams of sugar. So these are really important things to note when shopping, to omit those flavored yogurts. Even they say low fat, but they're high in sugar.
So the option then would be to take the plain yogurt and you
add your own fruit. Your banana, your apples, things like that. And also the snacks. Children having things like an apple or grapes or banana for the snack instead of having the very high sugared snacks.
And sometimes there are things that we think are healthy. For example, some of the bars that the children might have, which are supposed to be healthy. But again, they're just packed with sugar.
Sugar.
Packed with sugar.
Yes, certainly.
So the option is, in cultivating the relationship with your child, perhaps make your own bars and you can monitor the amount of sugar. There are recipes on different social networks that you can look up and make it an event, make it an activity in your family.
For them. But we're working with the PTAs as well, addressing the PTAs at the different schools so that they'll be on board. Certainly canteen operators, principals, vendors. I think it's going to take a little while to change in culture. Change is not something which comes quickly.
Not for
especially
anyone.
Food in Barbados, but we certainly will get there.
I had a remark to somebody that our national dish might be changed from cuckoo and flying fish to macaroni pie and baked chicken, because that seems to be, you know, the popular thing. And of course, you know, that's loaded with fat and grease and salt and all those unhealthy things. So we do have a lot of work. So in our last minute and a half, Prof, what do you want people to take away from our conversation today? What are those final points that you want to keep ringing in their heads as they sleep?
My final points would be to remember that childhood obesity, overweight affects 1 in 3 students, and we are focusing on switching, changing what we're doing. Change is important. We're looking at restricting the sugar sweetened beverages that they're consuming, water instead, building health clubs in the schools. We're looking at teaching the children what is healthy for them. We're looking at activity, exercise, at least 1 hour a day, and screen time less than 2 hours a day, which is also, we didn't even touch on that. And we're looking in general at having a national campaign to continue and succeed through advocacy of reducing the scourge of the epidemic of childhood obesity and overweight. And by extrapolation in the adults, because they're going to become adults in 10 to 15 years as well.
That is true. That is true. Our children of today are our adults of tomorrow. So the changes that we need to make in our nation for the future have to be made in our children now, today. Professor St. John, we wish to thank you so very much for taking time from your still very busy schedule.
It was a pleasure, even on a Sunday.
Yes. And we're looking forward to having our nutritionist next week, talking about practical ways to make healthy lunches for our children and for our adults as well. So until then, you've been listening to the Better Health Radio Show, helping you to live your best life. I am your host, Dr. Renee Boyce, looking forward to being with you again next week. Until then, Gregston.